So actually, what you can do is, you can certainly, for instance, you can have different subsite maps. You can modularize it into small little site maps, where you, for instance, say, let's have a site map just for the Arctic, or let's have a site map just for the section. You can do things like that. I mean, it's really like, it's more like, I would say it's a coding style problem, a little bit, like, it's up to you in the end. What would be very nice is like to have a graphical representation of the sitemap actually, where you could see the different pipelines, and you would also see how things are going through the pipelines. Like if you have a request, for instance, you could generate a request, and then you would see how it goes through the pipeline, which pipeline and from which the other pipeline, something like that would be nice. But I'm not sure actually. Somebody, if anyone is interested in that, they might go to Guido later in the break. It definitely needs something. If you're right, it's there are no excuses for it. So, on the other hand, the other point is might be like, I mean, you see, like you can certainly do sitemaps very elegant, in a very elegant way, by parameterizing them. But the problem is they are very elegant, but somebody new to it needs a lot of time to find out again how it actually works and stuff like that. Okay, so here's the section. It's done pretty much the same. You can go through it. It's really like the easiest. What you actually do is you check out these matchers, and you just type that into your browser, and then you see what each pipeline does. So for instance, if I'm going on the finance section, and again, if I'm going, instead of typing here HTML, if I'm typing XML, then I should receive the XML. So really, if you play later with it, with this publication a little bit, you really just go, really might be the easiest. You go through this sitemap, see the various pipelines, check out the patterns here, just type these things into your browser, and then you see what each pipeline does. Yes? Understood the concept of these pipelines, the channel and the pipelines are matched by matchers, and then you have within the matching you have the generator, transformers, and serializers. I think then you're pretty capable to do quite nice things already with Cocoon or later Vanya. Yeah, I forgot the attribute. Let me try the one we just did and try to make that it does work. I think I tried this one, right? This is the right section. So Let me see if I can make this not work. Internal dash only equals. So this should be this pipeline here, and then I do internal only. Okay, let's see what's happening. That's again up to you, like with all kind of that's the whole security problem, like the human being factor.
Up to now we have dealt with all the XML data, but with
the
new text application you would have other kinds of data,
like
image data, audio data.
The question was, like, we just discussed now that the source is actually XML, but of course every website has things like images or PDFs which are already there, things like that, or dirty HTML or whatever. What you can do is, there are two ways to do that, you could say. You can either use this component, the reader, which is just reading things, in the sense like it's reading and it's immediately sending it back to the client, so it doesn't have anything to do with XML. The problem a little bit is like that it's, since it's going through the Cocoon servlet and through the Java thingy, it's a little bit slower. Like for instance, in the case of images, like if you have images, you don't want to do that necessarily, especially if you have a website like big newspapers with many requests. So what you do is, you could, for instance, use an Apache, just a common Apache web server with a mod proxy or something, like, yeah, you could, for instance, use mod proxy installed in it, and behind, on a different port, you could have your server engine, like, for instance, Tomcat or whatever, running. And then within the mod proxy, you would, for instance, say all the images or everything which in this URI pattern would directly be served by the Apache web server, and everything else is going to be generated by Cocoon, something like that. Then you're again on the fast side, you would say. Maybe concerning the deployment, how you set up Lenya. In a real world situation with load balancer and things like that, or if you don't have but still want to be redundant without load balancing, I can draw a little map later and explain that what where we made very good experiences. I think that's one thing One nice thing to mention is, well, where actually, I think Stefano, his ideas, you can see them concerning the semantic map and stuff like that, is on the so-called views. Which means actually it's like you could say it's kind of a breakpoint within a pipeline. What you can do is you can put a label, set a label to a certain place between in a pipeline, and then it's going to exit there at the pipeline, and then it's going to enter the view here where you have the same label again. And then again, since you exit there, it's still XML, you can send it through another thing in there, and then it's going to be serialized in whatever you want. And what you can do is, like, for instance, up here would be something that I think I didn't. Let me see what they actually do. This is the PDF. Oh yeah, right. For instance, the print thing here. I think. Right. You see that? What I said. Right. The printer-friendly version and the non-printer-friendly version are done with a view. So which means this way here I'm having the just the home website, and if I'm clicking on printer-friendly HTML, I'm receiving a much nicer version, but without the navigation. And you see up here I have this question mark, cocoon view equals print. So what it actually does is, because I mean, the thing is, I still need the same content. So instead of doing again the same pipelines and things like that, I would like to exit at a certain point and then send it through another XSFT, which is going to generate this. This view of it.
Mark.
Here what I have is I have a view, a PDF view, where I'm saying after aggregation of the whole XML, as soon as I've aggregated all the XML, I take it out, send it through this XSRT, which is going to generate a formatting object, FOML, you could say, formatting object, markup language, and then it's going to send through the document, which is going to generate a PDF. Or in the case of the printable version, printable version, you are going to, again, you exit after aggregation, send it through this simpler XSRT, and you generate HTML. So this way you can reuse very easily various pipelines. Maybe another thing to note, I don't have resources in here. Resources is also very good to, instead of, you could say, well, I know that's why Tanuba might correct me, but I would say it's kind of a parameterizable pipeline where you could, like something like a method where you define it once and then you can reuse the resource at various places, right? We probably should stop here because as we don't get into menu. Any questions concerning Cocoon?
You sort of mentioned in passing about the first request gets compiled, stuck in memory, and then the following request is taken from memory, so the XSLT transformation is done essentially once it's generated, and then it's just piped through what's it already compiled in memory. Is that for all the transformations? So essentially, each transformation that gets called, the first time it gets called, it's compiled into memory?
The first time it's already being compiled, it's put into the memory, and it's generated a child class out of it, and then this child class is within the memory and executed. So it's
the transformation engine doesn't need to run for each request?
No, not necessarily. But really, you can configure that, it depends. A memory store in Cocoon, and you can configure that how many objects it should hold. I mean, the thing is, you see, like, if you have the Java virtual machine has by default 64 megabyte memory reserving. So let's say if you're having a very big website, it's a lot of XSFTs and things like that, and every object is being pulled in. So at some point you will run out of memory. So, yes?
I think if I understand the question correctly, what happens is we have an SSLP spreadsheet, which looks like that, right? The first time that's requested, that gets translated into Java, it gets turned into a Java class. That Java class is then resident in memory. But the actual, you still have to run the XML document through process using that. Yeah, you have to perform the transformation.
Yeah, that's correct. That's
not necessarily.
Not necessarily.
Cocoon is a caching system.
Right.
So if the XML document does not change, if the XSRT document does not change, then the final result will be served from the cache.
Right, but for each different XML.
And you actually can control the cache in many ways. For example, you can set explicit sparse times. So if you know that given resource, say images or XML, XSMT or a whole file length are going to last, then you can say to Cocoon, well, keep your result valid for at least 5 minutes, 2 hours, 2 months. I don't know if you're confident with Apache Monix Spires that exactly the same functionality. So as long as it's in cache and as long as the cache entry is valid, then it won't go through.
So it doesn't need to go through the XSLP transformation every time it's configured.
Absolutely.
So from a performance standpoint,
would that solve the previous question then of the images? I mean, if you were going to publish the paper once a day, could you just refresh the whole thing at the publication time and then keep the images there rather than go into another?
Performance-wise, what you do today, if you need to have huge loads on a Cocoon server, basically you use heavily this expires thing plus a reverse proxy in front of it, so that content will get generated just once and then it will be valid for the whole day and served by your favorite reverse proxy, say Squid or Apache or whatever. Anyway, if it goes through Cocoon, it will be served from cache. It will not be generated again.
But if images changes and you have it coded in the memory saying, keep it in the cache for 2 months, before the 2 months is expired, your image change. Do you have to restart everything? Because images, how does it know it's different?
Well, first of all, you have the normal cache control mechanism. You can rely on the last modification date of the file system or whatever.
Right.
So, but if you're confident that your resource is not going to change, you're in control of your application, so you know.
No, I know, but if the image changes within that 2 month period, say the client comes back and says, no, we don't like this image.
Right.
It changes suddenly. Or something happens.
Well, you can just restart.
You restart the server. Okay.
Or control it. I mean, with Squid, we have quite granular control on the cache entries, so you can validate that one. It will be requested once again.
Yeah. So you do have to restart it to pick it up again.
Yeah, or to have something. You have control over the Cocoon cache. You can validate single entries.
Right, but how do you start it if you have said it already that it's in the 2 month period do not expire and you want it to expire somehow to pick up a new image?
Right. The problem, if you have set an explicit header,
right.
The problem might be with user browsers that will not cast that resource before that period. So actually, I don't think it's advisable to have something like a 2 month expiry. If you have a huge load, what happens is that normally it doesn't really matter if your home page doesn't change in the next 3 minutes.
Mm.
But if you're experiencing 100 requests per second, even by setting the expiry time to 1 minute, you're saving thousands of requests from going through the Cocoon.
Okay.
So that's the point. I mean, it's granular to the second. So.
The differences would come the content management system in, but for instance, what I don't think what exists yet is something like a dependency manager, in the sense like, you see, like if you change, modify the content within the content management system of course knows you have changed something. So as soon as you change that, I mean, there are a lot of dependencies, like let's say you have an article and the sections or the front pages depending on the article. So then the content management system could tell to expire all these dependencies and tell to whom to expire these things. Like, well, what we often do is like, for many customers, they don't want to serve it dynamically. They have very steady websites. So they still want, they want to use Cocoon and Demio for creating the content, but for serving them to the public, they want to do just steady HTML. So we just export it during publishing. So again, if you could have a dependency manager, you could remove all this stuff and re-export it. So. But within Blender, there doesn't exist a dependency manager yet. We want to do one. I don't know if there's something similar. Not that I know, but I'm pretty sure something like that is coming, because it would help you a lot. It would also boost the performance. Well, it would boost the performance, but you wouldn't realize anymore that where it comes from. Any more questions?
Yes. You said Cocoon can be used also for dynamic content? Cocoon, you can use the content management for dynamic contents through a
DB
or something?
Yeah, you can.
How do you do that? Can you show an example? Do you have an example?
No, I don't have an example in here. But what you can do is, like, there are various ways. Either you could use a generator, which is just using JDBC and getting the content out of the database. Or there are, within Cocoon, there is a ES2L transformer. It's like a transformer where you can specify your SQL statements. And within Cocoon, you have a configuration file where you can specify the JDBC and the connections. And then you can generate out of the, just say, okay, select whatever from table, whatever, things like that. And then you get, you can create an XML and then send it to the address FT again. So.
Could you get that dynamic
data from external resource URI? Like, you mean RSS or something?
No, just an external URI.
Oh yeah, yeah, you can definitely do that. Well, you can, the easiest thing is you just say HTTP and, you know, like, instead of from the device at HTTP. But, well, actually, you see, there's something like the X-include, this W3 specification. We make quite heavy use of that, actually, that you have an XML with different X-include statements in it. And for instance, there you could say either take it from there or take it from there, and then there's the X-include transformer, which is going to take the XML, is interpreting the X-include and reading them and then aggregating them. You see, the thing is a little bit like, you could say these are the two ways to aggregate XML. One way is to use the aggregation thing of Cocoon, or the other way would be to use X-include. And the aggregation thing is, you could say, proprietary to Cocoon. The X-include is W3 standard.
Exactly, the central URI request information and together puts it in the stream.
Any more questions? Of course, then I suggest we do a short break, maybe 10 minutes. I'll come back here and then I'll start with Lenya. as I said, in the beginning it was a publication framework where you could have a source and then you create something. And in the meantime, it grew into an application framework by using, I've got to say, about JavaScript and stuff like that. So which we can also see as an example within the Lenya thing then later. So if we like, Lenya is on top of the cone, you could say, and it's using all these framework capabilities. So what you need for a content management system is, first of all, the inspection content management system is that normally people expect something out of the box. Lenya is certainly not something out of the box. So, but the thing is, what we try to do is that we have Lenya core, which is having the features like revision controlling and the editor interfaces and the access controlling and workflow and stuff like that, or certain generic sitemaps. And on top of that is the so-called publication framework. What you have is, you could say, publication templates. A publication is something like, is characterized by an information architecture and certain functionalities. Like, for instance, a newspaper, the information architecture would be the front page, sections and articles, and the functionality would be you can create a new article and you can edit it and you can publish it, or you could create a headline on the front page and publish that, something like that. A blogging publication would be a little bit different. Well, a blogging publication is quite similar to a newspaper publication, but still it's more like, even if you have topics there, you don't really emphasize them. It's more like you create a new blogging item, blogging entry, and then it's posted chronologically on the front page, something like that. Again, a blogging publication would have features like, or functionalities like trackback, things like that. So, it's really, the idea is to have different publications, a certain information architecture functionality is like a catalog that you, for instance, let's say if you're having your own publication or your own website, and then you characterize it what you want, and then you just go into this catalog and choose one of these templates. That's one way you can do it. And then out of the templates you would create a publication instance, you could say. The other way is, of course, that's how it often is, and that's the more difficult thing, is that people already have a publication built on Cocoon and want to make it editable or content manageable. And maybe we go into that later, because that's really a little bit, I don't believe, well, we try very hard to make existing Cocoon publications editable, manageable by Lenya, but I guess you will always have to do some modifications to really make it fit into it. So, but we can also see how we can do that. For instance, we have the website itself. Like if you go to the website cocoon.apache.org/lenya, this is created out of Forest, and Forest is another sub-project of Apache, and the idea behind Forest is to that all the different Apache projects and sub-projects have the same information architecture and functionality. So it's like Apache wants to, it became very fractured, the whole website. So the idea behind it is to pull things together and have kind of a Apache corporate identity. But still, the Forest publication, I mean, that's totally independent of Lenya, so I can show you later how we made it into Lenya, so that it still works, but it's not there yet. So. Okay, so concerning the publications, the idea is actually that you just, for instance, also the idea behind it, that if people do that, I mean, with regard to the Apache license, I mean, you can do pretty much whatever you want. Like the only thing you have to give credit, but you don't, if you do something wrong, you don't have to give it back, even if you give it to third parties or something, not like with the GPL. So, but still it would be nice that people are doing their own publications, that they are offering them on their websites or wherever, such that people can go there and download them and see how they work and redo them and reuse them. The idea is, of course, that you just grab it, like, I mean, similar to the concept of a WAR file, a web archive, that you just grab it, you put it somewhere, and right at the moment, in the case of Fenya, you have to register it within the build of public. But I'm pretty sure you could do that quite easily, that it's also going to find itself, and so that it's just working out of the box. So again, the Fenya itself is not out of the box, but the publications could be pretty much out of the box today. Maybe the only thing you have to do is so either by changing the CSS or changing the XSFT, something like that. So that's the idea behind the publications. Now, concerning editors, we have integrated Exaprus and Bitflux at the moment. I'm not sure if you're aware what Exaprus and Bitflux are. Maybe I'll show you a demo on the work. Here you see the CSS doesn't represent an explorer. But, first name? Yeah.
Rob.
Well, as well as just mentioned it during the break, maybe it would be pretty easy actually to transform the CSS into an XSFT. So this way you could again, people could, the designers could work on the CSS, but then they just give it to you, you transform it into an XSFT and you can apply it on the server. This way, it's again independent of the browser. Okay, let's see if I manage here. Now let's pick any article here. Was created by a company, Q42 in Netherlands, and their idea was to have a, I don't know why it's so slow. Well, anyway, the idea was to. Now I'm starting Exaprus, but I guess we get nowhere. Yeah. How this is going to take ages. Well, first of all, the idea was to have really an XML visual editor within the browser. So at the time when Microsoft did a really great job on Internet Explorer 5.5 by integrating XSLT processing and stuff like that. So they made use of it. So the idea really was behind it to just load the XML, the XSLT, and the XML schema, the XSD, and then just do visual editing within the browser. And that's it, and that's what they are doing now for a couple of years actually. And it was open source for a certain amount of time, but then they had business problems, and then the version we have is still open source, well it is open source, but they stopped the development in the open, and now it's unfortunately proprietary again. Okay, seems to be coming. Well, the XSRT now, okay, now it's loaded. Now you see here, what you have here, you have again, you have a different, this is now the menu bar of Exopus, which is very nicely done concerning the integration into the Internet Explorer. The XSRT is a bit ugly, I've done it very quickly. So now what you can do is here, you see like, I just go on here, and I can change my inline. The nice thing about it, I can also here, and maybe you also see like up here it tells you at the same time what XML element it is. It's really like, it's just the XML we have on the server, it's nothing changed or something. And for instance, if I go here and then you see here I can now add to this, well, the XML behind it is NITF, this News Industry Text Format. So I can go here and add a new paragraph to the blog. So, and then it asks me before or after, things like that. And then you see here it's added in here now. So you just go through here and type like that. Another nice thing about it is all the views. I mean, this is now the VisiWig view, which you can change by XML, by XSRT. This would be now the XML view. A bit small here, but...
Is this the open source version of it?
This is the open source version. It's 2.0.0.8. This is the last thing we have, so... you can also edit in here, of course, so for more advanced use. It's really very nice. But we realize it's, for many people, it's too far. Like many, actually people which are supposed to be visual people, they don't want it. They rather want something like, either HTML forms or something like Ruby or something like Office. Well, things might change. Well, anyway, in the end, so if you're ready, like, or you can go back and have a view. You can also have more than one view, things like that. It's really very powerful. In the end, you say that's it, and then it's going back to the server. Yes?
A few words about the development environment to write these XSLTs and create these views. What's it like to work with this setup?
These XSLTs are just like the ones we are using on the server. It's really like, this version has one little thing you need to add. For showing the text itself. Well, normally an XSRT processor is coming with certain default templates, like, you know, the very basic ones which are showing outputting the text and things like that. In the case of Exopus, you need to add these. I don't know why they are missing actually, but that's the only modification you have to do normally to your existing ones which you're using for just your normal presentations on the server side. So here you now see it changed. So now Bitflux is another XML VisiWig editor, which is a Swiss company which created it. And this one is still open source. And the principle is quite different. The thing is, these guys they, since Exopost was running primarily on Internet Explorer, they wanted to create something similar for Mozilla. So what their editor is not based really on XSLT, but rather on cascading style sheets, since Mozilla was supporting them very good from the very beginning. And unfortunately what they don't have is a schema support. They have something similar, but it doesn't really validate. In the case of Exopost, it's really validating, so that's very good, at least for certain people. So these are the two editors we have connected. We are currently connecting, what we realized also is, especially small companies or people who are doing their own private website, they don't want to create their own XML schema for their content. So they rather prefer something like XHTML or, because they want, what they often want is something like what we would call a default publication. They want things like they have a global layout, like the header is always the same, the navigation stays the same. But in the body, they want us to do XHTML, they want to do whatever they want, it doesn't matter. So there are editors. There's Midas. Well, Midas is actually just a content editor feature of Mozilla. We have nearly integrated that one. I can show you a dummy thing. There's also now emerging Mozile, MOZILE, which is based on EDOM. And I'm pretty sure, like Christian von Bitlux, he told me that they will probably work together with Mozile because it's quite nicely done. At the moment, it's only editing XHTML as well, but it should be possible also to do just any XML actually. So things are getting there, but it still takes time. Another thing which we will implement over the next 3 or 4 months is again an HTML form editor, just like it used to be a couple of years ago. The thing is, first of all, it's like certain people like myself are using VI. It doesn't matter if they're existing products like Eclipse or things like that. So there are still people who are just like that, and it's also like the thing is with all these more advanced editors, or at least browser-based editors, the problem is always like if browsers are going to upgrade by the new version, these editors often don't work on these new browsers. So people want to upgrade, but they can't because the editor doesn't, and they don't know when the editor will be able to work on the new browser. So for a fallback version, HTML form editor will always be good, I think. So I think it doesn't matter how advanced these browsers will become, HTML form will always work. Another thing which we made a prototype was an open office thing. Like, we were very convinced that, Greg Stein will talk more about WebDAV, and I'm very convinced that really everything will be WebDAV in the future. So, at least between the client editors and the server. So, since we tried as a prototype to connect OpenOffice, because then many people are, and that's just how it is, many people are used to products like Office and OpenOffice or StarOffice. And since OpenOffice and StarOffice are providing nice XML, or right XML of it, you can do that by people are taking it via WebDAV, changing it, and then putting it back to the server. There's also, I don't know how many of you will attend this afternoon the Twingle workshop, but Twingle is the idea behind it is really that you have one common interface for all different content management systems, kind of. Well, it's more the OSCON spirit that it doesn't matter if you have Lenya or Midgard or Zoho or Red Hat CCM or whatever you want. Yeah, but it's still a work in progress, so it takes some time. Concerning that stuff in Denmark, we are quite for sure going to use the Apache Slide project for that. Apache Slide is a Apache Jakarta project. It's basically it's a vector implementation and content repository API actually, which is very similar to the so-called JSR 170, which is a specification for content repository API. And as I know, it's becoming the reference slide is becoming a reference implementation for the JS 170. So it's pretty much there already. There's even, I think, Stefan Michels from Berlin and Germany, he already started to integrate slide into Cocoon. It's not very far at the moment, I have to say. But you don't really, I mean, you can also have slide beside Lanyard and just modify the configuration so that you can access, like, you don't have to really be connected. But it would certainly be nicer to have them together, because then you don't have to set up it separately. But still, our laptop is coming pretty, for sure, pretty soon, actually. Okay, so, coming back to Lanyard and the editors. So, okay, we have the editors, and there's also a scheduler in it. It's based on a Squash scheduler at the moment, which is not an Apache project, but it's very powerful. So what you can do is, you can schedule, for instance, articles that they're going to be published at a certain time, and things like that. Well, you could, this would probably be more a Swiss thing, but for instance, like if the snow is going too high, you can send out reports, like avalanche reports and things like that. Well, it's not just a time dependency, you know, it's like more dependent on, you can do all kinds of dependencies. Then we have region controlling in there, which is very simple. It's a reserved checkout and check-in, which means like that some person is opening it with some editor, then it's going to be locked for everyone else. So the problem is there, if somebody's forgetting to close it, then other persons can't open it, but they will see who opened it and when, so they can contact them. But in our experience, if you have content editors, little content snippets or articles, normally it isn't like that two people want to change the same title at the same time. So we also have a rollback in there, so every time you save it, it's going to be to do a rollback, so you can get back the old versions and things like that. The workflow is not integrated yet. We're working on that. This should be there within the next 3 or 4 months, but because we as a company are doing that for the University of Surrey, and they want to have that as a feature, so it has to be there. They're paying us for that. So. We also integrated Lucene search engine. Well, there is already an integration of Lucene within Cocoon, but we had some problems with that, and so we did our own integration, which has different features. The idea is certainly to merge or to converge. And then as I said before, we can I can draw a map how we do deployments of Lanyard that you can do with very little money. You can do a very high availability deployment actually, and very simple, very powerful. Okay, I think these are the features you have at the moment of Lanyard. Okay, so let's go back into the New York Times then and see how it is set up, because of the network thing, I mean, maybe I explain a little bit more, then we try to really put our hands on it, as I'm afraid that we're getting lost into installation, everyone has its own problem, so maybe delay that to, yeah, a little bit later. Okay. First of all, what you see here is now, if you go just to Lenya, then you see what kind of publications you have in there. Now these publications, where are they specified, and how do they get there? So, if you check out the source of Lenya, what you have is, if you do it from scratch, or if you build it, then you have this build.properties file, and in there, what you need to specify, first of all, you need to specify where your Cocoon version is. First of all, Cocoon is not side by side, it's really like Lenya's being merged into Cocoon during the build process. So I think some people had problems that they had Cocoon and Lenya side by side, and then they had Java bind exceptions and things like that, because you see within Cocoon there's the hypersonic SQL, it's a mini Java SQL database, and it's running by default on port 9002. So if you start up your Tomcat and you have Cocoon and Lenya at the same time, then they will both try to connect to 9002. So that might be the problem of some of you. So it's really like, it's not necessary to have Cocoon somewhere installed. You just have to place it somewhere to build, and then you have to specify within Lenya where this is. At the moment it has to be milestone 1. There actually recently came out milestone 2, but it changed quite a lot, and we need to adopt Lenya a little bit, that it's working together, milestone 2. But it shouldn't be that hard. Okay, now what I said about the publications, here in this on this path here, you can specify where your publications are. So what you can do is either, you can set a, let me see, you see, oh wait, here you see the publications I've... Wait, oh, that's the deployment already. Okay, so these are the publications which are being shipped together. If you download any of them, these are, you could say, sample publications. We have here different versions. This is Computer World, that's a computer magazine. Well, actually, this exists pretty much pretty here in the US, in computerworld.com. I think actually two people from IDC should be here, right? I think it's owned by IDC or IDT. IDT. IDC is owned by IDT. Right. Okay. And this is the Swiss version, you could say. Okay, and then this is the default publication. This, the idea behind it, as I said before, it's very generic, like, people should just should actually to have to change the XSRT, the layout, and then they should be able to use it. For instance, the OSCOM publication itself, you could say, is very generic, like it's just a tree and yeah, like that. The documentation, although docs is the old documentation, is there's still useful stuff in there, but probably you better don't read it. Then the docs new, this is the new website which you find on the Apache website, and it's also the documentation. Forum is something like we created that some 1.5 years ago. The idea was, at this time it wasn't Apache, so it was still Myona at this time. It was open source, but The problem was people didn't use it for several reasons. And I thought one reason, or at least I thought the one reason to make people use it is to offer a publication which people would like to use. And at this time, blogging was already quite big. Like, I mean, at the moment it's very hype to blog. You will, yeah, that's Dave Miner's here tomorrow, and you recognize that. And I don't know how it is in the U.S., but in Europe and in Japan especially, is mobile blogging, that you are blogging on your stuff, blogging on your mobile phones. So I thought, well, if you have a blogging publication, because everyone wants to blog, people use it, and then, that's the trick behind, but that was the reason in the end. So, and it's not that good. Then Oscom, at the very beginning, Oscom was powered by Lenya. But Lenya is really, at this time, we didn't have a default publication, so we didn't get very far. The CMS metrics is still powered by Oscom. Oscom itself is at the moment powered by Midgard. Midgard is really very good at having a general publication. There are other. But anyway, I think it's nice of Oscom to have all different kind of systems, and we really made them work together, like, and that's pretty nice, and to see how they work, like, because normally that's the spirit behind of Oscom, that normally people don't leave their communities, people stay within their community and normally see it there, and they try to rebuild everything, and that's the way how it is, but still it's very good to the board of fans, so it's very nice to see. I really learned a lot from being part of Oscom and seeing how the other systems work. So. Okay, and then UniPublic, that's a university magazine from Syria, so things like that. So they are, some of them are better, some of them are worse. We are improving them. We're trying hard to make sample publications which really work and are not looking like a mess, so that people really get into them easily. I think that's very important, that people are going to use it, or are able to go into use it, as people just are getting frustrated on their leaving it. Okay, so now the thing is here, okay, these are the publications in here, but now I have other publications, for instance, in here, like New Oscom Times I created for this workshop. This was originally based on some, it was called International News Alliance, different newspapers and things like that, that because here is a publication which is hidden, you don't see it. And this No Oscom Times is based on this more generic thing here. But what you can do is, every publication has a file, it's called publication.xml. In there you specify things like the name of the publication and maybe a description, and also the idea, we started doing tests like that. I mean, the thing is, as soon since all the publications depend on the linear core on certain publication templates, it's very important to have tests, because if somebody is changing something, you could break all the other publications actually depend on it. So it's very important to have this test. So at the moment, most of the tests are just written down to say you have to test that, and the idea behind it is to use something like AntEater or something else to really execute these tests automatically. Or what you also can do is, for instance, here, if you don't want to see it, like on the, for instance, this publication, you don't see it here, it's not being listed, because it's just a template publication, you could say. So in order not to show it here, you could just hide it by saying linearshow.files, something like that. So coming back to this one here, you are really, it's just like, the only thing you have to do if you have these publications within Lenya, you just specify the path to them in here. At the moment, it's like I'm having the base directory. You could also say something like just the publication itself, something like that. And then just the OSCOM publication will be shown or will be used. So this way, like, you can have really different publications at the same time in one Cocoon instance without using a lot of memory. But once we tried it out, like, we had 1,000 publications, well, we just copied them. And they work very fine, so you can really have a lot of publications side by side without a problem, without using a lot of memory. Because, I mean, if you would have to start a Cocoon instance for each publication, that would be pretty bad. You would be running out of memory pretty soon, actually. So, bye. Of course, linear Cocoon itself, I mean, Cocoon actually should be working in any sort of engine. So, but in our case, we are kind of using Tomcat Pro here. So we have here a special path to the Tomcat directory. Instead that you have to copy it by hand yourself, you just can specify the Tomcat directory in here and also the working place if you do a reset, like if you do a reinstall or change something that's going to be. Concerning if you update Lanya in order that you don't delete, like, if you do your stuff within the file system, and if you do a clean of it, or if you reset the publications or the core of Lanya, in order that you don't delete all your data by accident, you can specify here certain directories which should be cleaned, like, in, for instance, the content or the access controlling, like, you know, like the names and things like that. Okay, and in the end, like, in order to easily configure, I mean, Tomcat is using three or four ports, like the main port, which is entering, then there's a shutdown port, and another port to connect, for instance, to Apache. You configure them within Tomcat itself, but the hypersonic SQL port needs to be configured within Cocoon, so in order to leave, what we wanted to do is that you don't have to need to touch your Cocoon build. We didn't want that you have to go in there and fiddle around with it, so that you really can take just what Cocoon is offering and then we're merging it into it. So in order to change the hypersonic SQL database port, you can specify that here. So let's go into the publication then. So here again is this file, the publication XML, it's just an XSRT which is transforming that. Now if I'm concerning, then I don't know why. Okay, but now the principles behind Lanya is really to make it as easy for editors as possible for people who don't really know about computers or whatever. So the goal was actually to show the people really the actual website, not that you're getting into some strange admin interface where people first have to learn to find their way around. So it's really, so that's where the Lanya menu bar came from. So the only thing which we want to show, well, at least certain editors, is just this menu bar which they are used from other applications. So and in this case we now have also the live area, which is actually, I mean, live area would be for is the actual live area which people are going to see. Or it's maybe going to be copied into onto another server, onto another machine, where another Lanya or Cocoon instance would be running, something like that. We are going to add here the admin area now. Originally the admin area was supposed to be for doing stuff like access controlling, like giving permissions, creating new users, stuff like that. But we realized that many people also want, they would like to have this admin interface, like they prefer seeing the actual documents in the tree and things like that, and seeing the properties of each file instead of the actual website. So what we are going to do is we are going to split this admin tab into two. One will be something like we have on an Apple computer, like an Apple, well, instead of Apple, we are going to use the Apache Fabric, which is going to be more for system properties, like specifying user, checking if the system is running fine, things like that. And the other thing would be renamed like something like, I think we haven't made up our mind yet, something like page site administration or page admin, document administration, something like that. So it's really like a little bit like you have these steps of evolution. The first area would be the command line interface. Well, this would be this one, where you can do everything. Like, you can do everything, but you can also destroy everything. So the next area would be the site administration interface, where you can do quite a lot, but you can't do that much as on the command line. And then the next step would be the authoring area, where you actually just, the only thing what you can do is here is you can go to a section, create a new article, then go into the article, edit it, and then